Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Many of us wonder sometimes what's going on with our brains, like when we can't recall a name that should be totally familiar to us or forget why we went into the kitchen. These worries take on a little more weight as we grow older. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Brain Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to slow cognitive decline and enhance memory and mental performance. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the Brain Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for my Supplement Starter Kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and our guest is Kat James. She's an award-winning author and widely recognized expert on leptin, a subject that we introduced in part one. But we started by talking about a Lancet study that unfortunately had the effect of discouraging a lot of people from pursuing a low-carb diet. Their contention was that, carbs are a problem. If you have too many carbs, everybody knows that. But if you go very low-carb, that's trouble. Well, several problems with the study. First of all, it wasn't really a low-carb diet. It was like 30-40% carbs. Also, it relied on shaky recalls by people over many years. I think during the course of the study, it's a long-term study, they only asked people twice what they ate or what they recalled eating. That's not very reliable. Plus, they didn't control for other factors, including the fact that, generally people eat a lot of meat. They do a lot of other stuff that may be not so healthy. So, yeah, there are going to be some problems there, but, you know, what's a healthy way to pursue a low-carb diet?
And so, that's the thing, whether people are going paleo or keto, it's amazing. And, boy, over all of these years that I've been working with people, how leaning toward things, and you have to say things again and again because they're so fixed in, you know, one person's definition of high fat, for example, is not another person's. Oh, I'm putting a little olive oil or you know, coconut oil, so I must be eating high fat. People are fat phobic.
Haven't you found that the message has been so inculcated?
Frightened
by fat.
Yes.
Oh my goodness! You know,
after the Ivy League cardiologists admitted, you know, mm-hmm. the last 40 years we were wrong. Mm-hmm. The A to Z study compared Atkins to zone diets, and then the 16,000 study review. People need to just look up low carb studies and sit there and look at that. Even the falsified conclusions of the Framingham study where they actually lied and said, mm-hmm. you know, the opposite of what was true. The people who ate the most fat and the most cholesterol lived the longest. And they just were so disturbed by the outcome after those 40 years, I think, that they said the opposite. It's really incredible.
Yeah, I think what their confusion was is that sometimes people who have high cholesterol have problems. And they infer that it's a dietary source.
Right.
It might just be a metabolic dysregulation. And actually, some people have high cholesterol because they're eating too many carbs.
Yes, exactly. It's like saying that alcoholism is caused by pretzels when pretzels are offered at most bars.
There you go. Very good.
And so then the problem becomes how they execute it when they decide to do it and they are convinced, whether it's paleo, you know, Paleolithic man didn't, as you said to me earlier, cut off the fat off the meat and just eat the lean protein and eat
skim milk, low fat yogurt. Yuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Fat-free
and even in this Lancet study, they're using like yogurt and people who consumed margarine and you see it on the questionnaires. But anyway, so excess protein is a big problem. It sets off a pathway called TOR or mTOR, which is mm-hmm. one of the most biggest cancer. It's one of the biggest cancer initiators because it's cell proliferation and it decides when we're going to proliferate. Lots of protein other than when you're growing up mm-hmm. and you're not fully grown. Is going to set that off.
Yeah, we actually had Dr. Longo on our program recently to talk about that, his work at the Keck Institute at USC on IGF-1 from excess protein as a cancer promoter.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And the other problem is people, more simply, is that excess protein turns to sugar. And as long as we're on sugar, please, nobody please believe that the brain needs dietary glucose. That's
so interesting because I just had an argument with someone on Facebook, and I asked her what's her nutritional background, because she said this is ridiculous, because I was talking about low carb dieting.
Yeah.
The brain needs glucose.
Yeah.
The brain, we have all these things that help to maintain our blood sugar because we need carbs.
Right.
True or false?
And when we look at that, and I think it was some institute that they kind of commissioned to come up with this report. And that report, I think literally was called something like the Nutrition Institute or something. And they actually said in that report, but you don't really need the sugar. And of course, we make sugar from protein. We can even make sugar from fat. And but the brain loves ketones. And that brings me to ketogenic diets. It brings me to the holy grail of seeing ketones on your ketone strips, which actually does mean that you're not as efficiently using ketones as you could be. So it is a step way beyond, and a less dangerous step to go beyond it and go for leptin sensitivity. But it is just not intuitive. It's counterintuitive. Once you're there, you know, people envision big gobs of fat on somebody's plate, when in fact it's so elegant because that's where the big appetite drop off happens. But it's just a non-negotiable human mechanism to have functioning leptin. And the reason it's so kind of weird and compensatory and what seems out of balance to get there in modern times is because epigenetically we've been messed with. Even one generation exposed to high fructose corn syrup or even bisphenol A, there's a term I just became familiar with. It's not the typical epigenetic change. It's like an epigenetic mark or something. And that was Bill Sardi that told me about this. But you can really be changed just from exposures in one generation. And, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, we've been a little bit ruined here, especially in the United States. And people who are metabolically right, and we're talking about half the population at this point, they have to go further in their fat ratios than someone, you know, where it hasn't been completely exported to Europe and Asia, but we're seeing the beginnings there. They're going to mm-hmm. have to make the same kind of changes that we are.
So you're saying, in essence, that we're more vulnerable to the effects of excess carbohydrates because of some metabolic slowdown that we've experienced that we may have not experienced even during our lifetimes, but it's been an epigenetic transcriptomic change of our DNA that we've inherited through our parents or grandparents already exposed to a toxic environment.
Yes. And I'm just saying that the ratio, you know, the fat ratio being so high, mm-hmm. What it enables you to do if you get it right, and what I do, which I think makes it very unique, is that it's by feel and not by number. I laugh when I hear, oh, I can have 50 carbs, because I know what the woman I would have done. She would have had those all at one sitting just so she could get her drug too.
Mm-hmm.
And but the thing is that in order to live normally, in order to live metabolically the way Adam and Eve or Tarzan, whoever your figure, primitive figure might be, the way that they lived and functioned, or even how most people functioned in the 50s. Unfortunately, we have to do this ratio. But once you do it, the appetite plummets. And those who worry that everybody's going to eat so much meat, and we can talk about the environmental myths about that, especially mm-hmm. if you're eating grass-fed, But it's, you're not going to be eating a lot. You won't even be able to overdo protein once you're leptin sensitive. It will be built in that you will not be able to overdo protein or fat mm-hmm. as long as your carbs are negligible. And my opinion is that you need to go far lower than just about any low carb diet I've ever come across.
Yeah, you know, I have to say that I'm much more in tune with my nutritional requirements since adopting this type of diet. You know, it's a paleo diet, relatively high in fat. And I do use carbs because I'm not prone to insulin resistance. And plus I work out a ton, so I'm entitled to some carbs.
Yep.
But I noticed that by reducing, sugary or refined carbs and, minimizing carbs, I'm much more equanimous about eating. I can go many, many hours without eating.
Yeah.
And I tend to overeat less, but put a bowl of pasta in front of me, I'll go for thirds, fourths, and fifths. You know, that's just a trigger food for me.
Exactly. And there's no, you know, once you do that, of course, you don't have leptin activity being sensed in the hypothalamus. It just goes out the window. So that's an interesting thing. But when it comes to, and I've been doing a lot of debates with some of the top vegan icons in the country. Mm-hmm. And the audience seems very prompted, and I think by a lot of media right now, to say, well, if we can't get it on a nutritional, if we can't poo-poo the nutrition of this.
Let's talk about sustainability and global responsibility.
And even animal foods. You know, we know that the versions of all the vitamins and the long-chain fatty acids and the B12 and the form of D3 and all of these things and Weston Price's work point to the obvious that we need these as human beings. So what's left to talk about? Well, the environment is going to go to hell if we are eating meat, and even the UN making a statement, and yet it was misinterpreted as well. Their statement didn't say people needed to go, vegan or vegetarian, but more plant-based is what they said. But even that bears scrutiny, because look at vegetable oils versus animal fats. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They actually have been shown to have a larger footprint, carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. Grass-fed, obviously, what people don't realize is that if animals roam in their dung, which forms the topsoil, which forms water catchment, porous soil, fertile soil, and also leave behind a class of bacteria called methanotrophs. Mm-hmm. This was amazing to me. They actually just eat methane. And when
I think what you're saying is, I mean, the argument is that animal husbandry contributes to global warming because basically all these animals are passing gas and the methane goes into the atmosphere, and it's part of the problem with shielding us the top layer of the atmosphere. We're trapping heat in the atmosphere. You're saying that actually animal poop can reduce methane.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I learned this from Alan Williams of Standard Soil. There's also a documentary, Kiss the Ground. Many of them out there, but
preferably not amazing, when there's a lot of methano generating bacteria in the poop.
Yeah, I mean, what are we going to do? Get rid of the wildebeest? Get rid of And Alan Savory gave a TED talk. He believed animals were bad for the environment. Went to Africa and repents to this day for having a bunch of elephants killed and all this stuff. And then you have barren ground. And when we even begin to wrap our brain around the fact that it is roaming animals that make the topsoil, we should be importing millions. And if you look at the ocean's ability to absorb carbon, second only to the ocean is probably grassland farming. Some estimates say 15 years reversal of any man-made contribution, and that's obviously debatable, but it really, this needs to be understood. And this bacteria, whose only life purpose is eating methane, is not utilized in the methods of industrialized farming, which basically just puts all the waste in a lagoon, and it never hits the soil. And so it's remarkable. There's no, and the runoff and the corrosion is from impaction of the soil. You know, an oxen used to be able to plow 1 acre in a day. They can't do it anymore because the soil is all impacted, and that causes the runoff, and there's no water catchment. It's really incredible. Irrigation can even almost be eliminated in some cases with grassland farming.
Okay. So much for that argument. Well, I want to skip to something that just came out this month. Major study supports carbohydrate insulin model of obesity. And this article is published in the British Medical Journal. It's by Dr. David Ludwig. He's a pediatrician. He focuses on the problem of childhood obesity, which is a huge problem. It's going to ultimately sink our healthcare system if all our kids are overweight and become diabetic and dependent on the healthcare system at great expense. He conducted a very interesting study where he compared three diets. The diets were varied in their carbohydrate composition. Again, we had this, but at least the low-carbohydrate diet was somewhat approaching a legitimate low-carbohydrate diet. It was 20% carbs. They compared it to a 40% carb and a 60% carb diet. Yeah. And by the way, the low-carb diet, fortunately, was 60% fat. So there, that's the correct ratio.
That's good.
Not 20% carb, 20% fat, and 60% protein.
Sure.
And what they found was a dramatic reduction in, well, they measured leptin. They did look at leptin. They also looked at ghrelin. They looked at insulin response, and they looked at the weight loss. And amazingly, after they were on this diet, total energy expenditure was about 250 calories a day greater on the low compared to the high carbohydrate diets. In other words, they ate the same amount of food calorically, but they burned more calories.
Yep.
That's just dynamite.
Yeah. It's all in what we burn too. You know, it's not, it's whether we can burn fat. And, this is the only way to do it. Otherwise you're losing, when you lose weight, a large amount of muscle and bone if you are just restricting calories. And what's interesting is calorie restriction, all of the benefits could be, achieved if you did a fat fast. Mm-hmm. It's really the, protein, the TOR reaction response to calorie restriction that is, responsible for all of the benefits.
Right. So. I mean, the longevity and so on. You know, we have the Biggest Loser phenomenon where we had people go on ultra low calorie diets, lost scads and scads of weight. A subsequent article appeared, I believe it was in JAMA or New England Journal of Medicine, saying that these, all the folks who went on that show, virtually all of them are doomed because they can't lose weight anymore, even on very low calorie diets. They've all regained the weight and more. And it was a disaster. I mean, it was a ratings bonanza, but it was an absolute. And lawsuits. There's actually lawsuits.
I believe it. And Ron, I worked with a trainer from season three of The Biggest Loser, and she's gone public, Cheyenne Lombard. And she has talked about what I did with her. She had Cushing's and eating disorder, working out three times a day, barely eating once, brushing her teeth instead of eating, and went to eating three times a day, working out maybe once, and being a person who lost 18 pounds in less than 2 months, 6 pounds of pure muscle gain, no more six drugs, no more eating disorder, no more depression, record time, period came back, unbelievable. She was forced into early menopause there, and incredible change. And it was all from not believing this really harmful stuff. And when that reality show came out, it just made my blood boil. Yeah. I knew they were harming people.
And misrepresenting the whole approach and giving people like a false goal.
Yeah.
It's just a real disservice to the public. Talk a little bit about the mood effects of all this.
Oh, gosh.
Because you underwent a real, I think, a mood transformation.
Yeah, massive. Massive. And it's really unbelievable because even in rodent studies, you give rodents sugar and they isolate themselves. I actually have a lot of people whose stories were so close to my eating disorder story and social anxiety. Surely I would have had a label had I just had my problem 10 years later. Mm-hmm. Not only
that's a new diagnosis
bipolar,
in vogue now.
Yes.
I mean, it used to be called
social
shyness.
Anxiety.
Right.
Exactly. And so the problem is not, they haven't had luck with the drugs that they're taking, but it is amazing how there is almost no, neurological problem, and it goes so beyond just the depression area. As soon as you get sugar out of your life and things that turn to sugar, but also you can't do this without the fat. Even early studies on low fat diets showed there was depression. Even in The Lancet, there was a study, low fat diets correlated with depression. It goes along with everything else, the infertility, et cetera. And I believe the psych drug era that we have was from the low fat, belief system, along with the diabetes and the obesity, completely from low fat diets. And what I see, just if we even begin to talk about what I've seen over the last, 20 years with people, is an unbelievable across the board ability to very quickly get off of all of their antidepressants, even if they've been on since the beginning of when SSRIs were available. It's really, and for me, the feeling, that mistakable feeling that I dropped everything, including two incredible careers, to go after and make happen 24/7, was very largely based on psychological relief and relief from not only food obsession, but a feeling of impending doom, of palpable shame, and just depression. And that has revisited only if I've eaten, you know, the wrong thing, and I never choose to, because there's no craving anymore. That's the greatest thing. No more portion control. It's an accident if I have a little balsamic vinegar at a restaurant and I have that weird feeling that comes back, and it does get.
That's so interesting, because I have a patient who, and I've seen it more than once, they actually did a very interesting feature on the Sunday morning show on balsamic vinegar. And I thought that's great because it's wonderful tasting, but for some patients, it just throws them for a loop. And what is it? Is it the fungal residue in the from the fermentation process that has a brain effect? There's something about
possibly, but
food.
It's a reduction. You know, it is a reduction.
Okay.
And so it's sugar.
It's
as
sugar.
Well.
It delivers
and,
a lot of sugar.
And that only the slightest amount can take a person out. But your taste buds and the way you smell change so much that taste. I remember I had carpaccio, and they had put a little of that. It's actually very annoying.
Okay.
And, you know, when you smell things, you don't smell the pasta the same way or the bread. So, or the alcohol even. I have, you know, many people.
It's like a former cigarette smoker. It's like, you know, you used to, you know, be addicted, and now you can't stand it when people smoke around you. You know,
even coffee. Kind
of, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's not something I'm ready to relinquish my decaf. But, you know, we're all on the road to self-improvement. Where can people get additional information about this subject? Have you written some stuff that's accessible to our listeners?
I write also for Better Nutrition magazine, and I have a Wise Fat Burner column there. But what I would do also, if anyone wanted to sign up for my newsletter, it's a free newsletter. I only put it out quarterly, but they can request my leptin article, two of my best leptin articles, and I would be happy to send them those articles. But in general, with my show, but also this column that I do with Better Nutrition, and also just by getting on my newsletter at informedbeauty.com. And also there they can find out about what I do in terms of my phone and internet classes and the retreats that I do.
Okay. Well, you know, you're certainly on the right track, and you're really an exemplar of what can be accomplished through intelligent nutrition, because you know, your process has been one of both scientific discovery by perusing the scientific literature, but also personal experimentation. And it's made a huge difference. And, you know, thanks for getting the word out about this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on and for what you do as well.
It's my pleasure. Okay, that was Kat James, award-winning author and widely recognized expert on leptin. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.